burns. Sweat it out, wait my turn. So now I'm here with Roger Crawford. He is a man that I met through a mutual friend, Dave Lucchetti. And Roger, your background is, we don't know each other well, but I know your background has to do with overcoming obstacles. I know you are an inspirational guy. I heard that through Dave.
Okay.
And it's been reaffirmed by your wife,
right,
who's sitting next to us, and Brian. So we want to get your story. So let's take a minute to get to know you a little bit, Roger.
Sure.
Who's Roger Crawford?
Well, first of all, I want to tell you how much I appreciate being here, Mark. I'm a huge fan of yours, as we were talking earlier, and the real difference that you've made in Sacramento and encouraging entrepreneurs and so forth. So I'm just really pleased to be here. So I want to let you know that.
Thank you.
So who's Roger Crawford? So I'm currently a speaker and a writer. I grew up with a physical challenge that affects all four of my limbs, from the elbows down and from the knees down. So I was born with two fingers on my left hand and one finger on my right hand.
Okay.
My left leg below the knee was amputated when I was 5 years old, which gave me the ability to walk. And I have three toes on my right foot. So, sounds like daunting odds, right, growing up.
Yeah.
But I was really fortunate. You know, I grew up with parents that taught me very early in my life, no excuses, no excuses. Mm-hmm. My father used to tell me this, Roger, you don't live in Pity City. And that message was pretty clear, right? You know, don't be complaining about what you don't have, focus on what you have. And I was so fortunate, Mark, to have that growing up.
Were you, did you find yourself wanting to, feeling discriminated against in some way or feeling challenged in a way that would have made you look to be, to have pity?
Well, no doubt when you grow up with a physical
yeah.
difference like mine, and especially, you know, I'm 58 years of age, so that, you know, that was a few years ago,
okay.
and there weren't a lot of kids that were going to school that had physical challenges, so my experience was quite a bit different than it was today.
Yeah.
But sure, I mean, there were times that, you know, kids were a little tough on me, but here's the thing, Mark, everybody's going to face some challenges, right? My challenges, you can see. But when I look out into an audience, like when I'm speaking, I always remind myself that there are many people in that audience that have faced much greater adversity than I have. It just so happens that you may not be able to see it. So I guess growing up with the philosophy that everybody had challenges, and I wasn't going to let that necessarily hold me back mm-hmm. from what I wanted to accomplish.
Yeah. That's who you were even as a little kid. You were that guy that wasn't going to admit that this disadvantage was going to slow you down. Because I heard from your wife that you were an athlete and, dated the cheerleaders and all that kind of stuff. Was she stretching
the
truth?
Well, I should tell you about my wife and I were high school sweethearts,
okay.
except she didn't know it, you see, Mark. I got a pretty amazing wife, that's for sure. But I think what drove me, Mark, is I really wanted to be like all the other kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't want to be left out. If they were out playing football, I wanted to be out there with them. If whatever they were doing, I wanted to be part of it. And I think that really drove me. I mean, there's no question that there were times of self-doubt and discouragement and times that I wished I was different. But haven't we all felt that way?
Yeah, I wish I was a foot taller, 6 inches
well,
taller.
Sure.
Yeah.
And isn't that true, though,
but
for everybody?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, like, what our experience is. I think all of us, right, we look at, oh, if I could change this or that about my life, it would be perfect or ideal. And I think in many ways that's a myth. I think we have what we have, and we have to do the best with what we've got.
You think people have more challenges than you? You mentioned that at the beginning, that you look out into an audience that you're speaking to, and in many cases there are people that have bigger challenges than what you faced.
Well, sure. Think about this for a second. Think about someone who grew up in a family that was abusive or
okay.
they didn't feel loved or weren't encouraged or nurtured. I mean, that's a huge handicap. And I was fortunate. I didn't have that kind of experience. But I think for me, Mark, my mindset was always I wasn't different than anybody else. And that helped me not fall into that pity city.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I could look at the world and say, you know, everybody's got challenges, and that's okay. We just deal with challenges. That's part of life experience. You know, something I say to audiences is this. I say, look, challenges are inevitable, but defeat's optional.
Yeah.
We're going to face challenges, but defeat is most often our choice, right, because
yeah.
we just give up.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, so I mentioned that, you know, I'm not the tallest guy in the world, 5'6". And thinking about sports, you know, how do you adapt? You can complain about being a small guy. I don't even think I knew I was a small guy when I was in high school. I just played. But you adapt and you play football. I played football as well. You play it in a different way, right? You just learn how to play with the skills God gave you, right? Or the whatever, the gifts God gave you. I'm assuming that, what was your sport?
So the sport that I participated in most was tennis. I got involved with tennis, Mark, because it was a sport I could play by myself. We had moved from Ohio to the Bay Area, Danville, California, not too far from here. And there was a tennis court near our home and with a backboard. And I used to hear people hit that ball against the backboard. I thought, gosh, I'd love to be able to play that sport sometime. So I got an old racket, and I learned how to lay it against my right arm and hold it to my right elbow with my left hand, okay? So I was hitting it with two hands. But I still wasn't able to solve the problem of how was I going to secure the racket until I walked into a tennis store, and I saw, like, the holy grail of tennis rackets. And I'm convinced that this racket was made just for me. It was a Wilson T2000. Now, the Wilson T2000 is the one that there was the head of the racket with the strings, and then there were two parallel bars that were open, and then you had the grip. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. My right finger slipped in between the two parallel bars.
Interesting.
And that's how I learned how to hold the racket.
Describe your hands. This is, you know, people are hearing this on a podcast, and so on one of your hands, are you right-handed or left-handed?
Really appendectious. Okay. But you know, I tend to be more right-handed.
So one hand is basically like a gigantic thumb, right? I don't want to sound insensitive.
No, it's not insensitive at all. No.
And then the other hand has two fingers.
Right. Okay.
When you play tennis, which hand do you play with?
So I hit the ball. I hit the ball with two hands. So I'm trying to do this so people can visualize it.
So you're kind of like right-handed
swinging. So I lay the racket against my right arm.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm hitting it with two hands. So now people are listening right on the podcast and are saying, "Now wait a minute. Here's a guy who was playing tennis, held the racket with two hands, got an artificial leg, half a foot, but he played high school tennis and college tennis. How'd that happen?" Well, I think it's one of those basic life principles that I know you've practiced in your businesses and all your success. And it got down to this. I learned that if I could hit the ball over the net one more time than the other person, I'd win the point.
I guess that sounds pretty simple.
And I think it's a universal principle, really, in life. And that's all about consistency.
Okay.
If I could just continue to hit that ball over the net, I was able to do pretty well on the tennis court. And you know, I practiced very diligently, but I really focused on what I could do. You know, I wasn't going to be a serve and volleyer. I was a baseliner, just kept hitting the ball back and just give that person on the other side of the net another opportunity to miss.
Yeah.
I
hear a lot of times, and I think I believe this, especially in entrepreneurship, you know, playing to your strength is more important than, you know, shoring up weaknesses is important, but where are you going to spend your time? And then maybe it should be playing to your strengths and then surround yourself with teammates and so on that can shore up your weaknesses.
Well, I think for me, that was pretty evident.
Right? Okay.
There was a lot of things that were pretty obvious that I wasn't able to do. I mean, I wanted to be the greatest piano player in the world, right? So I didn't spend a lot of time focusing on that. I actually do believe that focusing on your strengths is crucial. So often people ask themselves this question, am I gifted? And every time I hear that question, I always say to people, you know, maybe you should rethink that question. Maybe it's not, am I gifted? Because everybody's gifted. But maybe it's, how am I gifted?
Mm-hmm.
How am I gifted? Because once we can get in our lane, when we can find our gift zone, that's when I think we can really find maximum success. Now, for me, it was consistency, just hitting the ball over the net. It got to the point where players were really, really skilled, and just being consistent wasn't enough. But it took me to a level that I could unlock my potential as a tennis player. Yeah. But I think that principle is so important in all of our lives. It's not about perfection. It's about consistency, because that's more important than perfection. I mean, if you look at your businesses and your entrepreneurial success, I bet very little of it was perfect.
None of it was perfect.
That's
I can
right.
tell you that for sure. And that's kind of my nature. And I agree with that. But, okay, so let's say we had somebody sitting here and we're talking to them. It's our job to coach them up. They want to grow a business. And they don't see their greatness yet. They haven't quite discovered it. What, I mean, steps to find that discovery that's so important before, because unless you discover that, you're probably not going to unleash your full potential.
Right. So here's what I believe, Mark, is that you really perform to the level of your expectations. You very rarely, if ever, exceed them. Sometimes. But usually it's that level. What is your belief? Where do you think you can go?
Yeah.
And that's really, I think, the first step. Because the better that we choose to think, the better results we're going to get. I think mindset is absolutely crucial. It's not the whole story of success, but I do think it's the foundation, because without it, talent, ability, and opportunity, it's really not that relevant. It really starts to, what is your belief? What is it that you think you can accomplish? I heard this a lot growing up, and I'm sure you did too. In fact, I saw a couple of signs around your office talked to the word impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about that word impossible quite a bit. I think it's important to remember that's an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily reality.
Right. When someone tells you that's not possible.
It's not possible.
Yeah.
That's their opinion.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's reality.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at people that achieve really some awesome success, I think to a person they would all say, yeah, there are people that said it was impossible.
Their
belief overrode that.
Okay, we talked earlier about it being a even bigger disadvantage if we weren't loved enough as children, and I think some of the times we had people shoot down our dreams early on, and then you grow up and you end up kind of blending with the rest of society, and to start thinking bigger, like you said, is you really need to be rewired or download some new software if you're going to begin to think differently, because your mindset doesn't just how do you change someone's mindset from not really believing in themselves or not understanding that they have gifts to starting to think a little bit bigger and looking from looking within themselves?
And that's a great question. I think it starts with people understand that you live life from the inside out. And really understanding the power of your thoughts and your thinking. Now, I think it's important to point out that's not all there is. Because I've heard people say to me, well, you know, I'm going to visualize it. I'm just going to visualize it. I'm going to believe it. And it's going to show up on my front door. And I chuckle when I hear that, because I understand the part about belief, but there's some other steps required. I have this line in my speech. I say, you know, you got to think about it and do something about it.
Yeah.
Because just thinking about it's not going to make it happen. But I think, first of all, it's getting in touch with the fact we live life from the inside out, knowing that you ultimately have control over the quality and the content of your thoughts. Now, there are some outside circumstances you don't have any control over. I can control my hands. There's a lot of things you face in business every day you can't control. But you can control your thought. Now, how you think doesn't change reality. It is what it is. But how we think shapes how we see what is.
Yeah.
And how many people do that we can all point to of examples of someone that really faced what some people would say insurmountable obstacle and turned into an amazing opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Did reality change? No, it was how they thought.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing is helping people see how negative thinking has crushed their dreams, limited their potential, hurt their sense of self-worth. If you can help them see how the negativity has affected them, then sometimes they can switch and say, you know what? I'm going to change how I think. I'm going to change how I speak. I'm going to change how I look at the world. It's something that doesn't happen overnight, and I'm not sure that you ever master it. My lovely wife is very quick to point out to me frequently that, Roger, you need to read your own book. I think she's right. There's sometimes I do need to read my own book. I don't know that you ever master it, but I think it becomes a habit that you have to work on all the time.
Well, you think about this. Once you decided that you're dreaming big And so your philosophy, your mindset is there, your attitude is there. Then I've always thought it's the amount of correct activities that you do, the amount of things that tie to what you want to become or how you want to change the world. It really becomes about the actions you take, the amount of actions that you take. I call it banging, right? I always bring up, hey, are you hanging or banging? Hanging is when we're on our downtime, right? We love to, like you have a bunch of kids. You like you hanging with the kids.
Right.
And then there's times when you are at your very best. You're out, I don't know what that looks like, but maybe inspiring a group, an audience, and really changing the way people perceive their opportunities in this life. But we don't take a lot of times we don't win because we don't spend enough time banging, right? There's not enough time in front of that audience or, you know, hammering that nail. If we're a carpenter, we don't spend our time doing the most productive things. As many, I call it as many as we can do correctly.
I think
like an AMRAP and CrossFit.
The hanging and banging philosophy, I think, is awesome. I love it. It reminds me of something that actually I heard today. So, the U.S. Open's going on.
Okay.
And there's a young man named Diego Schwartzman. And he's a small guy, but he's doing amazing. And they were talking about him, and they said, he's a grinder. Mm. And they talked about, and I know what grinding is in the tennis court, so, but here's how they described it. They said, he's willing to do the repetitive actions over and over and over more than his opponent. And I thought, isn't that a great, it's exactly what you're talking about. It's being willing to do those repetitive actions over and over again, doing what it takes. Because something that I've learned over the years, whether it be in athletics or business, is that there's a big difference between simple and easy. You've probably talked about this with your team. A lot about business is simple. Very little of it is easy.
True.
And the biggest challenge is executing consistently and doing the most important. And I was thinking about this young man who I'm a big fan of, watching him play tennis, but he doesn't have all the physical skills of all the other players, but he's winning. He's in the quarterfinals now. And, you know, he's a small guy, he doesn't have a big serve, but they said he's a grinder. And I thought about that idea of grinding. And if you think of, you know, people listening, whatever their career might be, think about this. What if you said, okay, let's say you're a salesperson. You say, every day I'm going to make 10 calls. What if you said, I'm going to have the attitude of a grinder. I'm going to do 12 every day. And then look at the cumulative effect over the year.
Yes.
It's huge, right?
Oh, for
That's
sure.
the banging part.
Yeah, yeah.
It's and you look at how quickly, you know, business can expand. It's just that little extra. And what people think, it doesn't have to be that you got to quadruple it. I'm just talking about just
the compounding effect of grinding it out on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
Yes. For sure. Now thinking about this too, so the grinder, right? I'm imagining you're kind of a grinder. Sometimes I think when you don't have talent, you end up being as much talent, maybe natural you know, height in this tennis player's case or my case, you end up, yeah, I guess you can go victim, but I think you end up needing to be a grinder. It's almost an advantage to recognize some of these, I guess these things that make you, that somebody might say you're inferior, but really it made you better. It's almost like being the underdog is helpful.
I heard this quote, and I don't remember who it's from, but it went something like this. It said, giftedness can sometimes be a burden. And they went on to explain that if everything comes easy, and if you're just supremely gifted, sometimes you don't think you need to work hard. Now, I will tell you that having an opportunity to be around, and I keep going back to tennis, but even people listening are not tennis fans, I'm trying to extract just some lessons that I think for all of us that we can maybe be inspired by. But when I've watched even the great players, like a Roger Federer, who my wife and I have had an opportunity to spend a little time with, he is supremely gifted.
Mm-hmm.
But he combines that with grinding.
Wow.
He pays the price. And I don't think there's any shortcut to it. I really, really don't, Mark. I mean, you look at the success you've had in your life, and you look at the failures that you've endured, you know, the setbacks, the adversity. Something I feel pretty confident that has not changed is you never stop grinding.
Yeah.
You never stop grinding.
I hope I don't. I hope it doesn't happen to me. But, you know, mentioned, you know, the, I was thinking of the term that I had heard, the disadvantage being advantaged, right? But I think as we measure ourselves, you and I are almost the same age, and as we measure ourselves, it's like, what did you do with what you had, right? What God gave you, or where? Because, you know, you can't criticize somebody. I mean, I hope we never get to the point where, hey, some guy, he went to Granite Bay High School, and, you know, he studied really hard, and his parents loved him. He had all the advantages in the world by some people's standards, but we have to measure him on what he did even after that. It sounds like Federer is one of those type of guys. He became world class because he didn't rest on those laurels or rest on those gifts that he was given.
Right.
That's special.
It is special. And I think it's so important as we're going through our lives that we enjoy the challenges and the adversity. And what I mean by enjoy, it's not that we wish for it, it's going to happen, but it's important that we learn from it, develop our resiliency, because we're going to need it in life. That's just part of it. And so sometimes having it too easy, Mark, can, like to your point, it can really be a disadvantage, because you're talking about, well, you know, you wish you were 6 feet tall. Well, you know, so do I. And, you know, sometimes, of course, I wish that my hands were different, my legs are different. But when I look back on my life, I wouldn't change it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Has it made me a little bit more determined? Perhaps. I'll tell you one thing it has helped me understand is gratitude. Mm-hmm. It helps me really appreciate what I have in my life. Yeah. And that's really a great gift, because you really cannot be grateful and negative at the same time. If you are really focused in on gratitude, on really what you've been given, the amazing, amazing gifts and opportunities, it crowds negativity out. That's why I think gratitude is so, so important, that we just take time every single day to really celebrate what we have and be thankful for what we have, because we're, you know, so much of us, we're just so fortunate.
Yeah. Well, so you say every day. That's interesting, because I'm very routine oriented. Everything I do is in this, I call it step minimization. 6 steps from my desk to where we're sitting, shower in the next room, CrossFit across the street. I live, you know, everything is like bing, 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 bing. My assistant, does all the little things that are very important that I can get as much done as possible. But when it comes to gratitude, okay, so how do you turn gratitude into a routine? Because, I mean, I agree, we can have a philosophy of being grateful for what we have. But, I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, the routine that I might put into my life that gets me there.
Mm-hmm. So I think it really can become a habit. And I think that, you know, you may be doing it right now, and it may not actually be intentional. It may just be part of your mindset, mm-hmm. how you're made up. I mean, I would imagine that during your day, there's very few times that you're reflecting on what you don't have.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think really that's
I don't even think I have that part of my personality. Mindset. I mean, I don't know if I've ever. I think my parents beat the victim out of me when I was a kid, and I was never allowed. You know, I wasn't abused as a kid, but like we weren't allowed to tattle or be victims or complain. We really didn't get away with that. It was sort of,
right.
You know, was trampled out of our personality.
They set that standard for you, and that's a standard that you've lived your life
by. I don't think I ever
by.
Get in that woe is me thing. Now, I'm not saying I never will. I've been sad, of course. You know, my mom got sick, and, you know, we talked about my son being in Afghanistan.
Right.
That was scary. You know, it's hard to think about, you know, it's hard to be grateful maybe at certain times, but generally, I've never felt sorry for myself too much.
Right.
I don't know. Have you, though?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I have, actually. I mean, there's times that I felt sorry for myself.
Like what?
That's a really, really good question. A good question from the standpoint of thinking of specific times. But thinking about would I ever get married, that was a big struggle. And I started feeling a little sorry for myself. Then thinking about what I was going to do as a career, there were times that maybe some self-doubt creeped in.
Were you worried about maybe people, discriminated against you?
Well, here's how I look at that. There are people, without a doubt, that... Oh, I'll give you an example. I had someone book me to speak, and I showed up at the venue, and this person said, you know, you didn't sound handicapped on the phone.
I'll never forget a regular person.
I'll never forget it. But here's how I look at it. There's a certain segment of people that may not be accepting of my hands or my legs. But you know what? On balance, it's not a big deal. Not a big deal. I mean, it's such a small, small percentage. Mm-hmm. I don't even spend time focusing on that. And I really have never thought about the idea of really discrimination. I'm really convinced that we can make our own opportunities. We can create those own possibilities in our life. Now, we can't do it alone, but I think that when you're determined and you're focused, I think that opportunities and possibilities open up. Now, for me, when I started speaking, I said to myself, I want to be able to look in the mirror and say that I could be a speaker even if I didn't have a personal story, mm-hmm. that I was an effective communicator, that if my hands were normal, my legs were normal, and I had no personal life story to use as a backdrop, because when I speak to groups, it's not about me, but I use my story as somewhat of a backdrop, right, to talk about a little something I've been through, but I really want to make my story their story. So, but it was really important for me to be able to look in the mirror. And so how it relates, I think, to your question is that, sure, there were times that I felt sorry for myself. But again, I think it's important, what I've said earlier, that I wouldn't change it, mm-hmm. because it's taught me so much about life. And I think gratitude is the one that continues to stand out to me. And just thankful for life every day and the life I've been given and my family, my incredible wife. I mean, I've way outmarried myself just like you. So,
yes.
You know.
It's called being a good salesman.
Yeah, I guess it is.
I always think of myself
as
more like kind of like a sales guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so thinking about, putting ourselves in that mindset, there's books that you can read. How do people put themselves in? I mean, if you had some recommendations for people, like, hey, read these books, come listen to these guys speak, have this podcast, Mark Haney Show. But
right. Absolutely.
But what would you say to them to get them, to downloading that good new software for themselves every day?
So if someone's struggling with negativity, lack of direction, lack of motivation, I would seek out some of the best podcasts, yours being one, and fill your mind as much as you can with all that good information. Because what happens is the more that you feed that software, because that's what drives the hardware, mm-hmm. It's going to make a difference over time. It's going to really make an imprint. And then you'll start to develop some new standards. You'll start to develop some new ways of thinking that are going to make a huge difference in your results. You know, something I say to audiences is this. I say that the fastest way that I know to increase results is decrease excuses.
Hmm.
That's the fastest way. Because what typically holds us back is ourselves.
Yes.
It's mostly self-imposed. And oftentimes it comes in the form of excuses.
Okay, give me an example of that. So excuses, is this blaming other people at times, or are these just other excuses? I mean, I'm trying to think of like I'm kind of usually justifying my shortcomings all the time, which I guess it is my excuses. And I know I need to eliminate that, but I'm rarely blaming others. I'm usually blaming myself.
Here's how I would define it. An excuse would be something that you are telling yourself that is limiting your potential. And what it's doing is it's blaming an outside circumstance or person or whatever for where you are today and why you can't move forward. It would be like in my own life, it would be like spending a great deal of time thinking, you know, I can't do it because, you know, I got three fingers and one leg. Well, you know what? That's not reality. You can. I mean, missing a few fingers and missing a leg, it's not the end of the world, okay? So that's how I would define the excuses, ones that are really, really holding you back. And when you really analyze excuses, not all the time, but most often, they're not based in reality.
Yeah.
They're an illusion. For example, I've heard people say this to me, you know, and a bit in my audiences, you know, there's no opportunity for a person like me. Oh, really? And then you start to unpack it a little bit and you realize that it's come from a place of anxiety. Mm. There was opportunity, but there was this anxiety within them that they thought, you know, what if I fail? What if I fail? What am I going to tell people? Yeah. What am I going to tell myself? And then when you start to help them unpack it and say, you know what, wherever there's an opportunity, there's a risk. Mm-hmm. Can't go hand in hand. So when you ask yourself this, I'm afraid to try because of the risk, maybe you can think about changing the question to, what opportunity am I going to miss if I don't try?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's greater than taking the risk. I had someone ask me this question on Tennis Channel about, there's a young man named Nick Kyrgios. Do you know who he is?
I do not.
Nick Kyrgios is this marvelously gifted tennis player who is notorious for not trying.
Okay.
He says he hates tennis. He hates hard work. He doesn't want to play. He doesn't want to compete, you know. And they asked me the question. They said, well, he says tennis is hard. Practice is hard. What would you say to him? I'd say, he's right. But regret that you didn't try is harder.
Yeah.
And it's on balance, right? Because he's saying, I hate tennis. I hate the work that it's going to take. Well, he's going to blink his eyes. He's going to be 40 years old, and the opportunity's not going to be there.
Right.
That's going to be hard.
Yeah. I missed my window.
Missed your window. So when I'm talking to groups, if I'm, you know, doing a Q&A or someone will come to me afterwards, and maybe it'll be along these lines of excuses, what I try to help them do is maybe unpack them a little bit and see where those excuses mm-hmm. come from. Oftentimes we think excuses are going to protect us. See, if I can say, well, you know, I'm where I am today, I'm unhappy, and I haven't reached my level of success, but it's not my fault. See, it's that over there. That's why. We think, oh, that protects us. But it actually does the opposite, Mark, because it erodes our sense of self-worth. And, you know, I know you're a big proponent of mindset, how important that is, you know, and about, you know, fixed mindset and so forth. Well, if you have a growth mindset, then you believe that you can create those opportunities. You can better your best. Yes. And so that wipes excuses out.
Well, part of my growth mindset, I would say, is, you know, understanding what my strengths and weaknesses are personally. But one of the things that I've been fortunate enough to do is realize that I'm not that good at most things, but I am pretty good at putting the right people in my life.
Right.
And that's just, you don't think of that as a gift, but I was good at making friends as a young person. I'm good at recognizing commitment and I guess showing appreciation for people who are committed. I've been better than average at that. And what I see with most people, and I'd say that's kind of my crutch. Look, I'm not that good. I try hard and I put good people in my life. That's as simple as I got it here. But I think other people, they don't take that proactive step of eliminating the people that are unhelpful to their life. Right? I have only helpful people in my life. That's really
right.
The people in my life are helpful to what I'm trying to do in my life. Otherwise, they're out of my life. And I think other people they won't eliminate certain friends. And we end up being the composite of the people we spend the most time with. So
absolutely.
People who are, if we're making excuses, if you or I are making excuses and our wives or our teammates are letting us be these victims, I mean, we haven't put the right people in our life.
Absolutely. I agree. And I would say this to you, that the ability to put those people in your life, to identify talent in other people, that is a gift, my friend. It is a gift. And it is something that really propels people to massive success. It is a tremendous gift to be able to do that. I would also say this, knowing you as I do, I think you also can create a compelling vision for people that they can follow and they can get excited about. And if you can get people passionate about what they see tomorrow, they're going to find motivation today.
It's interesting that you say that. Now, finding, I kind of think of that as like finding my voice, or you finding your voice, right? The compelling vision, getting the army to, you know, take the hill together. I think a lot of times there, fear comes into play at that as well, because I think, especially in entrepreneurship, if you've got 10 employees, that's one kind of leadership characteristic that you need to, you know, develop. But when you have 100 or 200 or 300, or you're speaking to an audience of thousands, I mean, that's a different kind of confidence level that you need. I don't know if you ever, did you run into fears about the public speaking or the leading of large people, large groups?
I've had periods of time where, especially large groups, maybe I've felt a little bit of fear. However, every group I speak to, I have some level of fear, and I'm so thankful for that, because it keeps you sharp, keeps you humble, keeps you grounded. If you take it for granted, they're going to pick up on that. Second thing is, if I start to have a lot of nervousness, I'm thinking more about me than the audience. If I can start thinking more about them and the value that I want to bring the audience, it takes the nervousness away. Because what is nervousness? At least from speaking, you're thinking about yourself. Mm-hmm. Oh, what if I start sweating? Or what if I stumble over a word? That's about you. Yeah. Think about the audience. If you think about the audience, that nervousness goes away. And I think that that's true in life, right? I mean, you think about if it's all about you think, oh, you know, what if I fail? But if you're focused outward on the opportunity and the possibility, then oftentimes that nervousness goes away.
Hmm. Okay, so Brian was talking, you know, gave me some notes to talk to you about. My storytelling soulmate Brian had given me some ideas on things that I might mention. And you talked about changing your mindset. So there's like a bunch of E's: expectations, expertise, excuse-free, execution, and endurance. I mean, we touched on some of those already. Endurance, though, that's an interesting one, because things can get monotonous. I mean, and I think too, sometimes greatness is just on the other side of that next attempt.
Right.
So
if you've read, and I know you have, anything about grit.
Yes. I've read the book Grit.
Grit.
Yeah.
So Dr. Angela Duckworth, who I love her work. I'm a big fan of hers. She talks a lot about endurance, but here's how she doesn't use the word endurance. She uses this. She says, it's perseverance and patience. Now, that to me is a very interesting combination of words, because you think perseverance, patience. And then she goes on to explain that people that have grit, they make a decision in advance that they're going to stay in it until it works.
Right.
They're going to be patient and persevere, because there are people that'll persevere for a short time, but can you persevere over the long haul? Yeah.
Long enough to discover how to freaking get it done.
How to
might
get
have
it.
To cut that from the AM radio version, Brian. You right? Because it takes time. Because you're hammering and hammering and hammering, and it's like it's not working. Do I keep hammering the same, or do I make a modification? And some of those decisions, you're so in the middle of the game, you're not really quite ready to, you know, make the adjustment yet. But quitting's never an option.
Right? Well, I heard this quote the other day, and I thought it was really funny. They said, you know, I love this idea of try, try, try. So they say, you know, try once, try again, try twice, try again, try three times, try again. After that, forget it. Try something else. And I thought, that's kind of funny, right? But it's true, because it's really about making those adjustments. It doesn't mean that you're following a losing plan, but it's making that decision in advance. You're not going to quit, because you got an ultimate goal in front of you. And when you have an ultimate goal, and here's how I look at goals. I think goals, to really be effective, and what I mean by effective is move us motivationally and move us emotionally, it has to be something you wrap your heart around. Mm-hmm. Goals are something you wrap your mind around, but find something you can wrap your heart around. And when you find something you can wrap your heart around, you know, you're never going to let your disappointments get in the way of your desire, because you got that emotional commitment to something. And the entrepreneurs that I've met, and I mean, anybody who's reached success in any endeavor, doesn't necessarily have to be business, I think oftentimes they get down to something that they could wrap their heart around. They're super passionate about what they do, mm-hmm. and that passion drives them. And I think passion, Mark, has to go beyond just money. You know, I got to tell you, I really have enjoyed taking a tour of your office, and I know some of the amazing work that you've done with veterans, and I really just admire you for that.
Thank you.
And I can tell you're really passionate about it. And I think that that really goes beyond like success. I think that's significance. You know, success is all about us. Mm-hmm. And it gets to a point in time where success, still important, but it doesn't necessarily fill us like it did before. And then it gets in, you go to a different level as I see it, and that's mm-hmm. significance, and that's about others. It's about taking those gifts that you've been given, the success you've enjoyed, and then reaching out and helping others and making a difference. I think that's a life well lived. I had someone ask me this question the other day, what do you want written on your tombstone? The truth is, I want on my tombstone, I'd rather be speaking, but if it was something different, it would be that somehow my life made a little bit of a difference. Because I think that's really a life well lived. And, you know, I just admire people like yourself, and we had talked about a mutual friend of ours, Dave Lucchetti, who has had just tremendous success and then taken that to a different level. It's not about them anymore. It's about something that is it's about legacy. It's a more lofty thinking, mm-hmm. I think, than about success. And I admire that immensely because I think that really speaks to what true success is.
Wow, I appreciate that. And I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs. So you talk in these big crowds, and you know, a crowd for me might be a couple hundred people at one of our events. But I meet with a lot of entrepreneurs in these small groups. I call them hanging with Haney. We meet 5 or 10 of us at a time, and we're always talking about our dreams, right? So I call myself the chief dreaming officer around here, and I'm always trying to encourage people to dream a little bit bigger. Because for me, I'm kind of going back to something that you said. I can wrap my heart around something if it has enough impact, right? If it's big enough, I can get excited about the smaller stuff. Sometimes I don't get as excited about it. Maybe I'm old and I've been there, done that, seen it over and over, and it's like, hey, I'm not that excited about that. But when it's big, okay, now you got me. And here I'm trying to ignite this entrepreneurial revolution in this hometown that we love. And I don't even know what that means for sure, but I know it has to do with inspiring people to be entrepreneurs, to chasing their dream, to living big visions, and taking risk and making sacrifice for the good of their family and the good of, you know, society. So I know that it's big. I'm still trying to get my arms around it. But what I see, I have people come in here on a routinely basis, and they're entrepreneurs, and their dreams are really not what I would consider that big. It's like, I just want to pay the bills. I just, you know, they just want to get over the hump.
Right.
They don't have this socially responsible business model. They don't, they just have, you know, hey, I just want to pay the bills and I don't want to work for the man. So it's interesting that people, I don't want to call that, that might be somebody's big dream. And so I don't want to diminish anybody's dream.
Right, of course.
But there are people that can't get their arms wrapped around building a big company or making a huge impact on society. There are people that just don't think that way.
Right. And
a lot of people.
And to your point, I think that that's okay. I mean, if that's the decisions people are making and they're happy where they are in their life and they feel like they've reached their potential, I think that's awesome.
I do too.
I mean, I would never, I don't want to define success for another person. I think they have to ultimately do it. Because if you try to define success for someone, that's something they can't wrap their heart around.
I love it.
People need to be able to find what is it that is going to be fulfilling to them. I'll never forget, I was speaking at a school district, and there was a woman there. She came up to me, and she said, you know, I'm a food service worker. And she said, do you really think I can make a difference? I said, absolutely. I said, you know, for a lot of those students that you're serving food to, maybe the best meal they have all day mm-hmm. could come from you. I said, maybe the only meal they have all day. And so she smiled really big and got a tear in her eye. She sent me a letter. She said, you know, Roger, she said, all the students that come through my line, I always make sure I say hello to them. I smile at them. I try to remember their name. And she says, you know something? I've created a big problem. All the students line up in my line. They don't want to go in the other line. They want to line up my line. I'm like, now that's success.
Wow.
I'm not going to, I look at that and I think, awesome. Good for you. Because I think about those kids, they'll never forget her.
Yeah. That's incredible.
And that's impact. And so that's where, you know, I think it's important that when we're talking about success, that it ultimately has to be our own decision, right?
I completely agree. And I think the other thing, too, is that food server or people who are doing something that you would think of as someone might think of or classify as like one small thing, the impact that that might have, you don't always see that impact. You may have saved that meal may have saved a life.
Absolutely.
I have a quick story on that from we were talking about military, and, you know, I'm involved in helping military. My wife, we've sent packages to people who are overseas, fighting for our freedom. And, you know, we group them up and we work through Bayside Church and and things like that. But anyway, one of the packages, we got back a letter. This was a couple years back. We got back a response that said, hey, you know, that package you sent me, it saved my life. And, you know, these guys are over in Afghanistan at war. And the package that this person got was just that reminder from home that he said, I was going to kill myself on that day.
Right.
And, you know, I was going to take my own life. I got the package from home with a nice little card from like somebody in the second grade wrote out a little appreciation card. And that little package from home through Bayside comes back. And, you know, I made it through one more day. And here I am, a year later telling you about it. And I think it's like you never know that one success story of a meal served or a package sent. You never know the little things that can really go a long way.
That's right. When I was a kid, I had a school teacher who stood in front of our classroom and he had all of us do handprints. Well, you can imagine having three fingers, right? The only student in the class who had any type of disability. And this teacher said something to me that really changed the direction of my life. I said, I was handicapped. And my teacher said, no, you're not handicapped. You're my student. Never forgot it. And it really, it's one of those moments, right, in life that you never forget. And I think that it's just so important that we hang on to those moments. You know, when we were talking a little bit about mindset, something I always encourage people to do is look back into your past and look for evidence of courage. Look for evidence of overcoming adversity and make sure that you take time to focus in on that because that'll give you strength for today when you could look back and see what you've done in the past. Because what happens when we're discouraged? We forget what we probably should remember, right? Yeah. We overlook all that, right? But if you can go back and you can relive that, I can give you encouragement because I cannot tell you the people that I've met and they've said to me, I'm a failure. I say, really? Tell me about your past. Have you succeeded? Well, yeah. Tell me a little bit more. And all of a sudden, they start to unpack it. And they start to realize, oh, I forgot about that. I forgot about this. Wow. And so how they define themselves just changes. Mm-hmm. But that often happens with discouragement.
Yeah, I love that advice is go back to those times when you persevered, patiently persevered.
Absolutely.
Potentially. Well, we only have a little bit of time left. Just any other closing thoughts as you think about people who might see themselves as disadvantaged in some way, any closing thoughts to any of us really as we approach life and how to succeed?
My first thought would be don't let what you cannot do get in the way of what you can do. When you start to look at your future and say, I can't do it because I think you really need to be careful what you say next because, let me put it this way, and I believe this to my core, when a person says to themselves, I can't do it, it's impossible, they're going to work really hard at proving themselves right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the same respect, if they can say, yeah, I can do it, I can do it, maybe some bumps in the road, but I can do it. And I know I can do it. I'm going to find what's inside of me, what it takes to accomplish my goal. They'll find a way to prove themselves right.
Roger Crawford, thank you for sharing your story. I know we have, I think we have events coming up planned around helping with mindset around here at Haney Biz. So, so hopefully we can get you to bring more of this over time, because I think this was inspiring for me. Just a good reminder for everybody who's out there that's already probably got mostly the right mindset. Great reminder, great affirmation, and I think really help for people who are maybe aren't there yet, right? Or maybe are not there at the moment. So good stuff, Roger. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Mark. Great to be with you. Thanks, my friend.